Welcome to Under the Water Tower, a production of Fellowship Baptist Church, located in Marble Falls, deep in the beautiful Texas Hill Country. Join Fellowship's staff and leadership while they explore, study, and discuss Bible passages. Here are your hosts, pastors Joni Wallach, Misty Grimm, Daryl Fishbeck, and lead pastor Dr. Jamie Greening.
We just wanted to put a quick disclaimer. Today's podcast is probably PG, PG-13. Jamie said maybe rated M for marriage and mature. We have some words and topics we talk about, so just listen with that in mind today.
Do we want a soft opening or a hard opening?
We should have been recording the last 10 minutes because that would have been a crazy opening.
No, no one should ever
Nobody
have to
wants
be subjected
to, hear that.
To that. So you want a hard opening or a soft opening?
How about both? And then we can pick afterwards.
You can't have two openings. By definition, it only opens once.
I think we just opened it without opening it.
No, we haven't opened yet. I'm polling the group.
I'm going with option one.
You want a soft opening?
No, that was option two.
Yeah, I feel, let's go with a hard opening. Yeah,
let's
I don't
do
know
it.
What that means,
hard,
but go for it.
The hard opening is...
The two agrees.
Why are people's marriages so crappy?
Whoa, he did it. Look at him. He went right.
I asked you, do you want the soft opening or the hard? And you guys went hard.
I'm still curious what the soft opening would have been.
You want the soft opening?
I want to hear it, yes.
Okay, the soft opening is, it goes like this. The key to marriage came to me probably a few years ago, but it happened right when we first got married. Kim and I dated for about 9 months, and then we got married. It was not a long courtship. We just knew. But during that time period that we were dating, I never saw her bare feet. It was one of those things that she was very private about, and I never saw her without socks on or without shoes on her feet. Never. And I had built up in my mind, this is going to be awesome. I had decided that she had six toes, and she was trying to keep that from me. Because you guys know, in case you don't know, I
she thought
a,
that might have been a deal breaker.
Well,
if she knew,
but for me, that'd have been like, I'm all in.
Yeah,
maybe
she didn't
my,
know
maybe
that.
My kids will have seven toes. You know, I'm trying to. But you guys know, I have this fertile imagination anyway. So I'm just thinking, what is it? And so once we finally got married and I actually saw her feet, her naked, uncovered feet, they're beautiful. There's nothing wrong with them. They're just normal feet, five toes, no, not even a hangnail. But it was just, for her, that's a very private thing. She hates looking at someone else's feet. So like anything on Facebook or social media with feet on it, yeah. She'll hit, I do not want to see this, right? That's her go-to. For her, feet is something... very intimate. Most people aren't that way. I mean, I see them at Walmart all the time with no shoes on, no inhibitions at
Walmart,
all.
Feet, gross.
And then I've got a child, one of my daughters, the first thing she does when she gets to work is take her shoes off and walk around barefooted at work all day. That's because her grandmother's from Arkansas. But for Kim, and so when I was able to see that, I realized, okay, she has let me into an area of her life that nobody else gets to see. No one else gets to see her feet. It's me. That's it. Maybe a doctor, but even then she's going, unless you need to see her feet, socks are on feet. Socks on feet is a huge thing in my home. That's what marriage is. It's the thing that you allow one other person to see and encounter and experience what nobody else does. We often turn that into a sexualized thing, which I think that's part of it, but it's not only that. It's the secrets of our heart, the things that we are afraid of, the things we keep hidden from all other eyes. Marriage says no. There are no barriers. Now everything is open and there, and we share that. So that was the soft opening.
Actually, I don't think that was a hard opening, a soft opening. I think you had the hard opening, which was the primary dilemma, and then you just gave the solution to the crappy marriages. So podcast over. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to call this one a short one.
I disagree with your estimate because the hard is where you just dive in. The soft is where you slowly uncover.
Yeah, but I think you did, and I agree wholeheartedly with what you're saying there. And I think we definitely will chase some rabbits with this. But I think you really encapsulated so much more than maybe we realize of the power of connection and intimacy and marriage, as opposed to this is a topic of marriage today, where a lot of modern solutions would be here's five steps or six rules or here's things you need to do or say to make your marriage work or better, rather than
buy my book.
Rather than you actually came from the Daryl approach today, which is more the why. You really went philosophical on us early on, using feet as the
I love how you
metaphor.
Took credit for my good opening. So you went all Daryl on that.
Those things are well played, connected. Perhaps those things are connected. Like, why are marriages crappy? Maybe we share too much with too many people with social media. Maybe we're sharing our heart way too much with people who don't need to see
our heart. I think that's I think that you're not wrong. Is that because
he said I'm not wrong? Mark it down.
You're not wrong
on this day.
I didn't say you were right. I just said you're not wrong.
Those step in the right direction.
I think that because that's the boundaries. Mm-hmm. Marriage says
it's a sacred place.
Right.
Marriage is a sacred.
There's a boundary around me that only some people get in. Mm-hmm. And then there's one boundary around me that only one person gets in.
Yeah.
And when you have that boundary gets extended out to 25,000 people who are your social media people, I mean, it does make my head explode when I see people post on social media who I love and care about posting things that really should not be put on social media. That should be a private family discussion.
Well, one of the things in my notes is I've been learning a lot about attachment theory, to go psychological here, in the last year. And it's basically the simple definition is it's how we learn to attach to people in our childhood. And I'm going to dumb it down because I'm not an expert, but there's two primary opposing forces, and one of us is avoidant attachers, where may have had a turbulent childhood or whatever, and so they don't trust people. And so they're avoidant with their relationships, but they're highly anxious with their relationship with themselves. And then on the inverse is the anxious attacher, who is craving that connection, that intimacy, and so it's the opposites attract. You almost always get... And this has to do with people that didn't grow up in a secure setting where they were allowed to have emotions, allowed to express themselves and discover themselves. One learned, I can't trust people. I got to protect myself. So I'm going to be very cautious in how I relate to people. And the other one is, I have to learn what everyone else needs, and I got to try and meet all of those needs. And these two people meet, and they drive each other crazy. They attract early on, but then they start driving each other crazy because, to tie your social media in, one type of person, and I can relate to the anxious attacher because that's me, is seeking some form of validation. Seeking validation.
The first
from
step is to admit you have a problem.
Yes, it very much so is. You got to see some self-awareness there. And so you're seeking validation from other people because you can't find it within yourself or from God. And then on the inverse is the avoidant. He's like, all right, you're asking too much from me. I need some space now. And it create one begins to chase the other, and the other one begins to run away. All of this to say, the anxious attacher needs to learn how to find security in themselves and not just throw everything out there hoping someone will validate them, and the avoidant needs to let their guard down and let their husband see their feet or whatever. That doesn't mean she's avoidant. I'm just making a point there. And both grow to find that security in yourself so that then ultimately you can share with that one person the deepest parts
the one
of yourself.
Person.
Yeah.
And I think that's where Joni was coming at it. Just we share with too many what only one should know. I'll double down on your
psychological
on your psychological analysis here with this is not in my notes, my show prep, but this is a good place to go. One of the problems I see with modern romance is everyone's looking for the perfect person to complete them.
Yep.
Right.
you completely, I mean, we even use that phrase in books and in movies, and we cry, you complete me, or you make me whole, or you're my person, you're my other. This whole misguided Greek idea of two pieces of a whole trying to find each other, that's ridiculous. You'll never have a good marriage. You'll actually never have any good solid relationships as long as you're looking for someone else to fill in whatever gaps or defects are in you. The only way to have a truly great marriage is for both individuals to be whole, mm-hmm. and as whole as they can be unto themselves. As followers of Christ, ultimately, we believe in the church that I can only be fully whole in Christ. And so you get that wholeness there, and then you have two wholes come together, and that's when it's great. Mm-hmm. But if you have two brokenness and wanting and unwilling to not get better,
right.
Or they think that the other human being is going to fix my brokenness.
And it doesn't even have to be one other person. I think people struggle to find all those things in one spouse, right? Because you feel like, well, with this one, we laugh and we have a great time. But then this one over here, I can be honest and be myself, and there's
no
judgment.
Are you advocating for plural marriages?
Here, no, I'm just saying that's the way a lot of people think. And I feel like whenever they do resist marriage, or maybe, you know, whatever their beliefs are in sharing things, I think that's the mindset. And we're biblically, we are to find all those things in one person, because that's what Christ is to us. You know, first and foremost, we find all things in him, and then underneath that comes marriage, where we find the, you know, one person fulfills those needs in us as well.
So
not as well, but
are you advocating, I can't tell where you're coming at this, are you advocating for, we expect our spouse to be everything for us?
I don't think we expect. I think in sometimes people use it as an excuse
to not get married. Or
yeah.
To have poor marriages.
Maybe both.
Okay.
Maybe both. Well, on Joni, I was just kind of riffing off what Joni was talking about on the social media. You know, it's just a kind of a open, free-for-all type of thing. And I think that's a lot of now, especially with social media. You know, you meet people and start relationships and all these things. And, you know, that can lead, if you're
well,
a married
person. Well, if you don't have
person,
any boundaries.
Yeah, and yeah. There's no boundaries there, then it does lead to those types of things.
I can almost always point out people who I know. Let me start over. I can point out a couple that's in trouble when one or both of the people will start posting on Facebook how much they love
mm-hmm.
their spouse.
Right. It's a red flag.
And all these pictures of, like, when they got married mm-hmm. or this.
Why you gotta be talking about me?
well, you know. Because they're trying to convince themselves and everybody else everything's mm-hmm. okay. And that's almost mm-hmm. it's almost a red flag mm-hmm. or cry for help. We're not okay.
Well, and you're talking about crappy marriages, you know, I think when it's effort. People don't want to put the effort into their spouse being their one and only, and not looking outside for the other things they need when it is in Jesus first. You know, Daryl said that, you know, finding whatever you said about themselves, being at peace with themselves and finding it within themselves. But
you talked about the anxious attacher and the avoidant attacher.
Yeah. But we can't find that in ourselves, right? That has to be, we have to find that fulfillment in Jesus. And I think whenever we lack in doing that is when we start to struggle in our marriages, because we don't want to work for it.
Oh, I agree. I think we put our marriage where only God can be,
yeah.
which is one of my pet peeves about the modern Christian movement. I'm going to be very, very careful here, because I don't want to be the pastor who's anti-family. I'm very pro-family. I'm pro-marriage, by the way. Very pro-marriage. I believe in early marriage. Daughters. Do you hear me, daughters? My daughters, early marriage. Your mother wants grandkids, daughters.
Could I push back on that in a minute?
You may.
Oh.
It could be hazardous to your emotional health. I worry that we've emphasized family so much in church life that we've put family, and so many folks will tell you, I'm not coming to church. I have family things to do.
Right.
Because family has become the center of their being. And when you do that, you're going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
Not because family's not important, but family must be on the outside edge with the Lord in the middle. And I'm going to go one step further. If your kids are the center of your life, you've messed up.
Yeah.
Because I've told my children since they were old enough to understand words, I love your mother more than I love you. Mm. Because, one thing, it's true. I knew her before I knew you. But second, you're going to leave one day, mm-hmm. and I'm still going to be stuck with her.
I'm going to be.
So if it ever comes down between you and her, it's always going to be her.
Always.
There's no competition. You should just know that up front. You're never going to win in that one. So it's your relationship with the Lord. And if you were coming at this from a secular perspective and say, I'm not a Christian, I don't go to church, I don't believe in the Bible, the principle still holds. You still must be at peace, as you say, with yourself and know who you are. And I believe ultimately that is found only in Christ. But if you can still have a good marriage and not be a Christian.
Yeah.
You will never have as good a marriage as I have, mm-hmm. because I have Christ at the center of mine.
And he prays better than us.
I do. I do. I'm just better. I'm going to get that t-shirt. I'm just better.
And
better.
So humble.
Humility is my strong suit.
I kid you not. I'm not going to say this. No, I was gonna own something, but I'm not. It would just make me look even
worse. So what did you want to push back on, buddy?
The whole your mom wants grandchildren, and this that may have just been a side thing, but it made me think of something I've picked up on in the generational arguments over struggling with relationships. I think we've got two issues here. You have a younger generation who's struggling with that self-acceptance, and because everybody does, because of sin and shame and guilt and trying to find out, God really accepts me as I am. So we have to find that sense of worth
in
ourselves.
He gets us.
I just cringed.
I wish everyone, Liz, all two of you listening, could have seen the shudder that ran through his body from his bald head all the way down to his unseen feet.
My covered feet.
My feet aren't covered, so.
I think you have a younger generation, like our kids, who have seen the crappy marriages that you referenced in the heart opening of parents and grandparents, and they're like, I'm not so sure I'm going to buy into the same philosophy that created that. And so then they get the message of, hey, they go home for Thanksgiving or Christmas, or are you married? Who's the special person in your life? When am I going to have grandkids and things like that? And they're hearing this message of, there's this expectation on them that's your role, as opposed to, you're my child, you're my grandchild, I love you where you are, as you are, who you are. And I see this younger generation saying, don't put that on me. You know, don't make me a baby factory, so to speak, or whatever. And I know that's not what you were saying.
That's exactly what we mean.
Okay, well, there you go. So, and that younger generation
Mama wants grandkids.
Is pushing back
her,
on that.
Her literal phrase is, I'd like grandkids before I die. And she says it just like that.
I can hear that.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's just...
She goes to the house. All the children's books she's collected through the years that no one will ever use. it's a bit. Anyway, I digress. I hear you. I think that there is a disconnect. And that's a different idea, perhaps, than talking about why marriages are bad.
No, totally.
But it's related in that, why are younger folk putting off marriage? I don't think they're putting off marriage forever. They're going to get married, but they've decided to put it off. We got married in our early, almost Gen Xers generally got married in their early 20s. Most of the millennials are not married at 30.
Let's be honest, they can't afford the life of singleness. And they're thinking, you want me to have kids and try and figure out how to pay those bills? I mean, financially, there is a younger generation that is saying, from a very rational standpoint, how do you expect me to afford to have kids?
Okay, so that's the... Now we can transition to where actually my notes, because we are off note. And that was
Joey Chase and
so the the crappy marriage business, which is, and if that word offends you, crappy, I have, there are other words.
I'm doing okay now.
Are you doing okay?
I'm doing okay. I've accepted the word crappy as being okay.
That's been about 9 years now, 8 years now.
One of my funniest stories of just really getting at my mom once, she said, I said, we're somewhere and her glasses were messed. I said, "You got some crap on your glasses." She said, "Oh, I just hate that word." I said, "Oh, sorry, you got some crap on your spectacles." And she did not find that as funny.
I think that's hilarious.
That's kind of funny. That's fun. Glasses? Okay. Whatever. But is the pressures on marriage, and one of them is finances. I do believe that we live in an age where financial pressure affects both the decision to get married or not get married, or once you get married, this cauldron of neediness that is finances. We don't live in a world where one person going to work for 8 or 9 hours a day will cover all the things that people expect to have. It just doesn't happen. So you don't have the luxury of a stay-at-home parent. I mean, very few people, very few homes have that luxury. And so that creates this pressure. But even if you had that possibility, I'm going to argue most women who historically have been the ones who give care in the home, most women don't want that anymore. Mm-hmm. They do not want to stay at home and raise children. They want to raise children. They want to have children, but they don't want to. They want more out of life.
Yeah.
Not to go into the America Ferrera Barbie speech, but and if you don't know what that is, I mean, the Barbie movie is probably the most religious movie I've seen in a decade.
Yeah.
But she goes into this speech about the expectations that women have, and it's and the unrealistic expectation that I can be the perfect mom, have the perfect body, have the perfect job, and still hold it all together and give everybody what they need to make them feel comfortable. Those expectations on women creates pressure in the marriage.
And I think that's kind of what I was touching on about the whole
the
grandchildren thing, is that that's another one of those expectations that an older, you know, my family unit and things all, you know, get around the holidays. That's one of those things that comes up, and you don't, it's just what you've always said, what you've always done, and you don't realize until this younger generation starts speaking up. It's like, yeah, you're putting an expectation on us that's stressful.
Mm-hmm.
That's adding one more thing in a very stressful world.
Is it legitimate? Mm-hmm. Is it a legitimate thing for a 23-year-old to say, "I can't afford to get married"? Discuss.
I think so. I have our oldest son, he's about to be 31 in a couple of weeks, and he's not married, and that's what he claims, is that it's expensive, and he just doesn't want it. He doesn't want to be married. He doesn't want children.
Well, I got married, and I can't afford to live with her. So, yeah. I mean, that's... yes.
I think that's
fair to say.
This generation being more...
I'm going to need you like an addendum, because someone might not understand.
I married someone who lives in another country. So there's a little bit of burden to try and get there.
All right, go ahead, Joni.
I do think this generation...
And not mail order. It was legit. So I'm sorry.
Did she mail order you? You're going over there. That's awesome.
Jen's got a Cadillac. I'm going to buy me a Texan.
There's like
a checklist. You didn't know there was that kind of social media that I was on.
She just clicked all the boxes. He fit.
Going to buy me a Texan.
Ball.
She gets Daryl. This is not what I thought.
Not at all
Return
what I expected.
Return Amazon.
Bring some Velveeta.
Pass the warranty.
That's funny. I do feel like this generation, though, is more apt to have children.
When you say this generation, which generation do you mean? Because I am a generation and this is now.
Okay. I feel like the YZ kind of generation, they're more apt to have, to not get married, but to go ahead and have children on purpose. Like, it's not like, oh, we had a child, but intentionally have a child together, live together, and not get married. And I haven't unraveled that.
Well, there's no commitment. You know, that's part of that. There's no commitment there to hold them.
But when you have a
together.
Child with someone, you're pretty held
but in their
together.
Mind, but in their mind, it's still not, you know, it's
when
not
you
marriage.
Uncover the feet, you're pretty held together. Like, so, you're always, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I did not mean to set that parameter for the discussion. I believe that's part of, I'm gonna get in a relationship to have a child, but not get married. I believe that goes back to where we were at earlier, in the sense of people look at the bad marriages out there, the crappy marriages, and so you're 21 years old and you say, I don't want any part of that, but they still feel the biological desire, the normal desire to have a child. Mm-hmm. And so they say, and this is an intentional use of the word, I want to divorce these two things. I want to divorce having a soulmate I spend my life with and a child I'm going to raise. And once you separate those and you say marriage is not about children, once you do that, well, now, or marriage is not about sexuality, once you do that, it makes perfect sense that someone would decide to have, I want a child, but not this commitment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's because they don't want marriage. The only people, ironically, the only people right now clamoring to get married are homosexuals. Mm. It's a strange, strange thing that has happened.
Because that door has never been open for them. And it's not an expectation for the 20-year-old kiddo. It is, they feel like the pressure is there, like it is an expectation. I think it's a push back against the I'll do what I want to do.
Maybe.
We're a different generation.
Who suffers when a woman decides she wants a child but she doesn't want to marry the father? I mean, who suffers in that? You know, and when we talked last week about things,
and then you get a kid who grows up and gets an attachment.
Exactly,
theory.
And it's just this vicious cycle. And last week when we talked about, or the week before when I got cut out, Daryl, doing things
in order—that's
what I'm talking about. It just makes things harder on everybody when we do things out of God's order, and that's a prime example right there.
Well, I agree with you. I'm not arguing for divorcing marriage from having children.
I'm just saying
when you take the spiritual aspects and the social aspects out of the marriage covenant, and you say children aren't connected to marriage and family isn't necessarily connected to marriage, well, now you've changed what marriage means. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so for us, like Misty, when we grew up, I would not have even thought of the idea of that it was even a path forward to have children and be in a long-term relationship without the marriage covenant, because that was the order. Mm-hmm. That's the way it's supposed to be. And I still believe in that order very, very much, but our society doesn't. And that has created a pressure on marriage that I think is one of those marriage in our culture had problems, and so we pulled on the string. And instead of sewing it up tight to mm-hmm. fixing it, we're unraveling mm-hmm. the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And before you know it, we won't have anything.
Well, and it all goes back to Scripture. I mean, a man and a woman were the first things that, you know, people God created. And so you see marriage first and foremost in the Bible.
It's the thing we say. I say it every marriage ceremony. Before there was governments, before there was a church, the first institution is marriage.
Yeah. And when people don't want that part of it, and you can't expect people that don't know, I guess, to know.
Well,
you
and
know?
Put a pin in that. Go ahead and ramble. I want to come back to that.
Ramble for it. I may just forget what I was going to say anyway. So
I do feel like in a cancel culture, though, like marriage is being canceled. You know, one of those things, you know, everything's getting canceled, so. Marriage is the next
but
thing.
But love is not.
But
well,
love
and
is
see,
not.
That, I
You're
think
right.
that's kind of what I want to say is I think the institution of the church, the way you said about before governments, before institutions, hit on.
That's the pin.
Well,
it's a pin.
The church, the institution of the church, has a wonderful way of doing the wrong thing. And
no.
I remember early on in my youth ministry years, they kept talking about statistics about teenagers leaving the church when they graduate and go off to college, and all these statistics and statistics are leaving the church. And so the solution was, we've got to find a way to make them stay. We've got to tell them what they're doing wrong, and here's what you have to do. You have to do this, this, and this. And rather than saying, well, could and don't say anything, but could we maybe figure out,
you got the hand,
why they're leaving the church? There's the why question. And find out what's going on in them and speak to the spiritual need rather than trying to get them to fall in line. We're doing the same thing with marriage. Okay, we're talking about all these reasons people are leaving marriage or not wanting to get married or whatever. And the church tends to say, well, let's double down on here's what the institution of marriage should look like. You should get married. You should do this. You whatever. And we
should
try to
force.
I know, but we come at it from this.
Mama
you're doing it wrong. You need to do it right, as opposed to saying, why is this happening? And can we speak to the spiritual need? Because obviously they still have the God-given desire to want to connect. Go back to Adam and Eve. They want to have children.
Everybody
they
wants to be loved.
They want
to be loved.
To have
That's
that intimate relationship. And so why don't we, like Jesus, maybe speak to the need of the people rather than try and say, no, here's how you're doing it wrong. Here's how you should do it right.
Maybe you should write a book.
No.
Then you have your reality shows, you know, 90-day fiancé, love at first sight. And those
Farmer
just
needs a wife.
Make me crazy. At least those are like, you know, they meet the people for a, but some of those shows you just, I mean, they're just automatically getting married. It's crazy. And it makes me crazy.
It all started with a newlywed game. That's what ruined us. So
making whoopee.
Let's put a we need to put a tag on the beginning of this
PG/ PG-13.
This podcast is rated M.
For
marriage.
Well, we're at 30 minutes too. If we need to take
I'm
a
not
breather.
Ready for that yet.
All right.
I want to cover this institutional because one of my pressures. Pressure point. One's finances. I think it's legitimate. And before I leave the finances, I do think that we have done a bad. We've done a bad job by creating a world that is anti-marriage. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're not set up to support the healthy development of marriages and families. We're set up to stress people out completely. I'm not certain that it is a legitimate thing to say at 23, I can't get married. I think it's a cop out because what I hear you saying is I want stuff more than I want a family. There are sacrifices you make to get married and to have children. I've never regretted those sacrifices, ever. I don't think
they have a lot of good examples of what that might look like.
I agree with you. I agree. But also, they've been programmed from material. And it's our fault. We've done it.
Right.
I don't blame them.
Yeah.
I refuse to go down the path of saying it's their fault.
Yeah.
They're a product of what we've taught them. What we have taught them is you got to have a car. You got to have your life together. You got to have all your debts
college
paid.
Degree.
You got to go to college, get a degree. You got to look right. You got to smell right. All the things have to be right about you first. Then you're able to launch out, which you're never going to get there.
You did say that earlier. Mm-hmm. Earlier you said you have to be whole first. And I know I know that's not what you're saying. I'm just saying earlier it sounded like you were saying you got to have your stuff together and then you should get married. But I know you're saying spiritually you have to know who you are.
Or at least you have to understand that that's the goal. Because if you come into a relationship, I don't think any of us are ever going to be fully healthy and secure, especially not in our 20s. But if I know that that is the goal, that I have to be coming from a place of wholeness or
right, you're not
desiring
gonna complete
to be
me.
Right. At Jesus least the mindset right. will help.
I'm going to push back though on Joni a little bit, and that is, I hear what you're saying in terms of you said get your stuff together, and now you're saying you don't have to. Our problem is we have defined getting your stuff together by material
the
stuff.
Right, the wrong stuff.
And that's not what I meant. And if anyone heard me saying that, that's not what I meant at all. The idea of got to buy a house before you can have a family, that's silly.
Right.
You know, you're never going to get there. You get there together.
And it's the getting there together.
I do think a lot of millennials and youngers, they want right now what it took their parents 30 years to get.
I was thinking that earlier.
And that's a problem they have. Now, institutions. Every institution in our society is waning. So trust in government, trust in hospitals and doctors. I mean, the whole anti-vax thing is where you see the anti-institution of the government and of the healthcare professionals melding to say, I can't trust you for this vaccine. Every institution, the court system, serious lack of integrity. High schools, colleges, education system, all are under attack. I would not want to be sitting on a school board right now, right? Mm-hmm. Because people are coming after every single institution, politics, Congress, everything. No one trusts any of it. The church, right? The church is probably We started it. People came at us first. They're still coming after us. And we deserve some of it, but not all of it. We need reform, not removal. The issue, though, is that marriage is an institution. And so once you start chipping away at anything that sounds like an authority or a controlling narrative, people are just this. We live in an anti-institutional age.
Right.
And they're going to come at. I think that's a lot of why the 20-year-old says, I want a child, but not marriage, because marriage is an institution, and they just don't trust it.
Well, and it's a partnership, right? And how many people don't want that, like you just said? They both want to be in charge. They both want to be head of the house. Nobody's going to tell me what to do, so I just want part of what you can give me, and then I'm done with you, you know, because there's no commitment and there's no partnership in
that. I think you're absolutely right. I think you're 100% right on analyzing where people are at, those pressures that we have. How many minutes now?
36.
All right. It's probably now time for a break. Take a little break.
Yeah, I've had a lot of coffee.
Kelly's going to give you some important words about the podcast and about our church. We're going to come back. I got some stuff to read. I got some other things. And I bet we have some Bible verses to talk about.
You are listening to Under the Water Tower, a ministry of Fellowship Baptist Church located in Marble Falls. We would love for you to join us for worship. Visit our website for worship times at fmf.life. Do you have questions or suggestions on future topics for Under the Water Tower? We would love to hear them. Send us an email to office@fmf.life. If you like what you hear and would like to support this ministry, visit fmf.life/give. That's fmf.life/give.
So, yeah, I'm really channeling the Under Pressure song.
Under Pressure.
Yeah. Which
I love Queen.
Well, but David Bowie. See, I can live without Queen. David Bowie makes that song for me. I love David Bowie.
I'm opposite you.
Really?
I don't like
Queen's
David Bowie.
Queen and Pink Floyd, the most overrated bands, I think, ever.
I don't think so. Pink Floyd, man.
She's gonna
I could agree, but Queen, I love Queen.
Really? What's your favorite Queen?
Another One Bites the Dust.
Oh, see, my mother told me when I was a boy that song was evil.
so I shouldn't sing it.
And she said,
Bill Gothard told me that.
It was on.
Yuck.
It was. Now, this is my mother, who was like the biggest Beatles fan you can imagine. But she said, I could not play at a jukebox at JB's restaurant. My childhood's come about. If I set this in blank, it would be one of your sad stories.
It would be, yeah. I'm totally tracking with you.
But we go there for hamburgers or whatever, and then the jukebox, and it was like a quarter, and you get two songs. And I mean, I always want to play that song because it's got a great bass line. I was forbidden.
Oh.
And my mom got inside my head. And even when she wasn't around, I knew I couldn't
it's
play
evil.
It. Because she would call. I know what she would do. She would call. The workers in the restaurant is my son. This is the 80s, right? You didn't need social media because your mom knew
everybody.
Is he listening to that
party
song?
Lines?
I knew, but she said that song's evil.
Evil.
So I don't know if that's colored Queen.
I'm sorry.
It sounds like it has.
Yeah. No, apparently. I don't think so. I don't. I overcome other things, anyway,
Under Pressure was where that started.
I knew where it started.
Just checking.
I am not that old.
Older than me.
Old man yells about Queen. So
turn that down.
The pressures that we have, one of those, I think we've kind of been dancing all around it, is the pressure of marriage itself, that to have a perfect marriage. And because we know that we are flawed individuals and the person we may be in love with is flawed, that we say
your husband's always trying to get you to show him your feet.
You know, you really can't bring that up to Kim. You know that, right? I'm safe because she doesn't listen to the podcast. that needs to, you know, what happens on the podcast stays on the podcast.
And that goes for you, all you listeners, too.
Greg.
I agree. The pressure of
Joel will be posting it on Facebook.
That's right.
Jim and Margie. They listen.
Hi, Jim, Margie.
I think the pressure of comparison, too.
The comparison of relationships. You so we see someone who's been married successfully for 50 years, and we look at the person that we're dating and we say, this is never going to be them, because we forget the power of transformation mm-hmm. over decades. I mean, Kim and I have a really great marriage. It's better now than it ever has been, but it's gotten there slowly and through lots of dangers, turmoils, troubles, and snares, right?
But is the purpose of marriage your happiness? You know, and that's...
I believe it is. Actually, I believe marriage is not... The purpose of marriage is not to make you miserable.
No, but it's to go through those times and those hardships.
Oh, I agree with
they
that.
They bring you closer together. So it's the ultimate goal is not just to be happy. It's to be, you know... It's to build you together and grow together.
I
agree. Ultimately, you know, it is the demonstration and the example of what we are to Christ, ultimately, right?
So marriage, I agree, is you're going to have ups and downs and hard times and bad times. That's every relationship, doubled over so in marriage. But I want to be happy in my marriage, and
sure.
I believe that I should be happy in my marriage, and I believe that I should be happy with my wife. And if I can demonstrate that, then that is the best teacher to those who have suspicions about marriage.
Yes.
But that's what I mean. When people look at you and say, oh, you've got a great marriage, you and Kim are so happy, and blah, blah, but it's not always that way. And you don't want to give anybody false hope that being married at any point in time is just pure bliss and happy. Although it is, because you do grow together, and ultimately you do have those, like we said, the ups and downs. But I think we represent a union, and you're in that sacred covenant like we talked about, and that also is your testimony as to who Jesus is to other people too.
Mm. I think we expect marriage to be like a Hallmark movie, and
yeah.
it's just nothing
and it's
like
not.
That. It's messy.
And you always hear, you know, you give 100% and I give 100%, but we're all married and we know that's not true. Mm-hmm. It's never 100-100, you know.
No, but I have to give 100%. And Kim has to give 100% because some days I can't give anything.
That's what I mean.
Right.
Yeah. It's always.
We have to get to 100%.
It balances. Yeah.
It's somebody not, has to get us
we're not
there.
Giving 200%. We yeah. have to get to 100%.
Yeah.
And
but it's give
some
and take.
Days I can't.
It's just
it's
giving
give and
all
take.
You have.
Yeah. I was reading something recently, and it was using the example of the Trinity, and it was talking about, like, traditional thinking is very binary. It's A and B, you've got two opposing forces, and they, you know, say a husband and wife, and then it's all about learning to compromise, which means you bring yourself to the relationship, but you kind of lessen yourself for the marriage. And he said, but Trinity thinking is you've got A and B come together and actually create a C, which is the personality of the relationship, the marriage. And so it doesn't devalue A or B. It takes all of A and takes all of B and creates this whole other third identity that mm-hmm. satisfies and fulfills and brings happiness and joy to A and B, and actually validates our purpose and our significance mm-hmm. and it creates a whole other third thing. And nobody gets lost in the midst of it. It actually creates something more mm-hmm. than had you been individuals and stayed separate.
Well, that's it's interesting you did that because I brought in a book that has that exact point said differently. It's a Mitch Albom book. You guys read Mitch Albom books?
Nope.
I went through a Mitch Albom phase where I read like
never
everything.
Heard of him.
You've never heard of him?
I have not.
Wow, we've got to fix this. Who broke you?
A lot of people.
So his famous book is Tuesdays with Maury.
Oh, okay. I have read that.
So you liar.
I didn't know the author's name. I did just
you read books and don't know who wrote it?
I don't that remember. I've read a lot.
Jamie is now offended.
Misty's over here. Danger,
Will
Robinson.
I don't memorize
danger.
All the authors'
pull
names.
Pull up. Shields up. it's terrifying. Not every author.
Oh, that Mitch Albom. Yeah.
No.
He also wrote Five People You Meet in Heaven. That was one of his big books. This is not one of his bigger books. It didn't sell as well, but I love
Wednesdays with Freddie.
Sorry, we can't have nice things. But I went to a phase where I read a lot of. I like his writing style. He gets like a point and he goes in on it, and it's always dressed in relationship. So to me, it's very. He's not doing pastoral ministry. He's writing books, but the work is the undertone is very very everyone very very pastoral. This is one called For One More Day, and it's about a real person I just need you to stop.
Daryl,
my day has been weird. I just thought of Les Mis.
It's Tuesday.
And it is about
Tuesdays with Daryl.
A baseball player. Ooh. Who's in his career and it's not really going well, and his marriage isn't going well, and his relationships aren't well. And what he gets is one more day with his dead mother. Mm. And the premise of the book is the baseball player who did sports for a long time. He really believed this happened. So it's kind of, he's fictionalized it, but it's based upon his real account. Well, one of the things his dead mother tells him is, I brought it to read. It's hard to read through the microphone. She's telling her son, what I mean by that last one is, there may be times that you fight, and sometimes you and Catherine won't even like each other. But those are the times you have to love your marriage. It's like a third party. Look at your wedding photos. Look at the memories you've made. And if you believe in those memories, they will pull you back together. I've always thought that's a great concept. Mm, so I love my wife very much. I mean, I adore Kim, and I wouldn't take for her. There are times I might, not talk to her for a couple of hours.
You almost said days. I heard you censor yourself.
But I adore her. I love her. But I also love, as you say, a Trinitarian thinking, I also love, as a third thing, the life we've made together.
Right.
And under no circumstances would I want to throw that away. I can put up with a lot of other stuff, because one of the things that holds us together is the marriage. I love our marriage. I love our children who have been
the product blessed of us your with marriage.
Exactly. But also the things that we've done, the stories that we tell, the inside jokes that we have. We can have entire conversations with no words. Mm-hmm. I love that about us.
And you look back when you start to think about things, and kind of like the scripture, return to your first love when it's talking about Jesus. And you can also say that with your marriage as well. What do I, he's making me crazy and I don't know why I did this and blah, blah, blah. But then you think back, okay, what was it about him that made me fall in love with him? What was it about him that drew me to him? And when we kind of put it in that light, I think it changes our perspective when we remember the reasons why.
Right, and where you've come.
Yeah, how far you've come.
And the institution we were talking earlier, I like to think that Kim and I have become an institution in ourselves.
Sure.
And that has an impact mm-hmm. on other people around us. Mm-hmm. It does make me sad when I hear people say, we could never have what you have. Because you can.
Because you can.
I wish
work.
You could have met us in 1993.
Yeah,
right?
It's work.
We were different.
And it's the whole comparison problem of, you can have what we have. It may not look like this because it's unique. It's not about the externals. The externals are the fruit of the connection and the commitment and the trust and the relationship you have with each other. And that's where the nuts and bolts take place. Everyone's going to look different, but you can have that fulfillment in it.
Yeah. And you always hear people say, well, we're just growing. We're just not growing together. And I think that's a lot of two, where two people, their things change. They're not on the same page, and we're supposed to grow, and we're not going to grow exactly the same. But that's where that grace and that compassion and that understanding, you have to be willing to continue to work at it.
Well, and you have to be willing to let the other person grow.
Grow. That's right.
Love means a lot of things. But one thing love means is, I want you to be a whole person.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that means you're not codependent upon me.
Yeah. But you have to want to be that whole person as well. Mm-hmm. It's a partnership, a complete.
So if you need this, whatever this is, I'm all for it.
Yes.
Because that makes you better. And mm-hmm. you may be growing in that direction, and I'm not going that way, but I'm still here. Mm-hmm. I'm growing too, and we're going to intertwine.
Well, that transformation, like we talked about in the first podcast, our transforming of our minds, that all comes to play when it comes to marriage as well.
Well, and to bring it back to attachment theory, one of the practical things about that is, I know that I'm anxious. I have that anxious predisposition, so that means I have to work on that. And so when an avoidant, a.k.a. my wife, says something like, I need some space, I've got to work on some things, I need some time to myself, rather than me freak out about that, because I want her to be whole and have what she needs, I'm able to say, this isn't about me. This is about her, and I need to give her what she needs. Then there are times when she can say, I know I'm avoidant. I'm fine on my own sometimes, but he's anxious and sometimes needs reassurance, so I can give him some reassurance. And it's that finding that mm-hmm. ability to communicate, to know what you need to be whole, but also then to be willing to give your partner what they need to be whole and not either need to try and control them, fix them, change them, or make them how I
agree,
want them to be.
As long as you are not trying to find that outside your marriage, you know.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Because I know a lot of time, and one of the things I wrote down on my pressures on marriage can be in-laws. It can be outside influences mm-hmm. that come in. And when you've had it with your spouse, then you turn to this person. Mm. And,
well,
and we have to be
pressure.
Sure that we can't. Yeah, we aren't. We have boundaries there that say, no, we can't do that. We take it to the Lord. We bring it to each other. And that's where it stops.
I do believe our culture is too uptight about sexuality. And I could, that's a different topic. But one of the things that we have done is we've become too deprogrammed for the exclusivity of sexuality mm-hmm. in marriage. Mm-hmm. And I think that because a whole lot of people believe I should experience, I should feel, mm-hmm. why would I deprive myself? And I think it leads to that mm-hmm. pressure of my husband is no longer doing it for me.
Right.
He
well,
does.
And in Genesis,
or my wife is no longer doing it for
yeah.
me. She does. And I'm personally offended by people who leave their spouse because they gain weight.
Yeah. Mm.
I have seen so yeah. many men, the whole trading in for a younger model, mm. it makes me physically ill, and mm-hmm. I get angry.
Yeah.
I get very angry when I see that process take place. Mm-hmm. People do split ways, and sometimes, I mean, sure. I got a whole thing on divorce, but we're not talking about divorce today. But when it's only because sexually or eye appealing
superficial
mm-hmm. superficial you're going to leave someone, well, she let herself go or he let himself go, that makes me crazy.
Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely yeah. crazy.
Well, when relationships are built on looks or sex, then when it comes
exactly.
down to those things are not there anymore,
right.
mm-hmm.
or
you're
an object that I'm using and right. now you no longer mm-hmm. serve me because you're
there's
not
no humility.
Meeting
yeah. there's no humility, and marriage is humility. I mean, you're showing your serving your spouse, and you're ultimately, you know, showing your humility.
What are you showing, Misty? I could concur on all of those issues. You cannot try and fix a patch in you or your marriage with another person. Now, what you can do, though, is this is where friendships, I think, are vital. I need friends in addition to my marriage. But my friends can never take the place
right.
of my marriage.
Yeah. And you need them to be honest with you and to hold you accountable. Look, you're yeah. acting crazy. You need to go to your spouse. You need to make things right. And, yeah.
Well, I would always rather be with Kim.
Sure.
But I also enjoy being with other people.
Yeah.
And my
He's
friend...
He's talking about us.
Oh.
He
do you
want to
believe this?
His face says otherwise, but okay.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. I'd rather stay here with you home today, honey, but I'd rather go to work.
I'd rather go to work.
Did we just become best friends?
oh, dear. So I need those friendship relationships because sometimes they that helps me with my marriage. In other words, interests. Mm-hmm. Kim has no interest in some things I'm
right.
very interested
yeah.
in. And she has interest in things I can't even see, right? Mm-hmm. Just about the colors. I see red, blue, and yellow, and that's about, and green. That's about it. She has all the, so we have these different, that's what I mean by
right.
you can find that
sure.
somewhere else, but you cannot find the intimacy
right.
and the connection that mm-hmm. you get, because that's when you're going to mess things up. Mm-hmm. When you take what is meant to be just between you and one other person, specifically think about the bedroom, but also just communication.
Emotionally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I do believe there is very much an emotional adultery that takes mm-hmm. place mm-hmm. in which people, both hetero and mm-hmm. homosexual adultery, mm-hmm. That takes place where we give ourselves intimately and tell someone else things. That's why the phrase work wife, oh, mm-hmm. that's awful. No, not no, but
No. Make it away, Todd. God forbid. No. That's just not a horrible, horrible thought process. Because once you go down that thought process.
And our emotions, you know, our emotions take over when we get in mindsets like that. And so that's, I think that's super important that we are able to identify, why am I feeling this way and what do I need to do about it?
Well, and sometimes I think it's there's something missing from your relationship and you're not able to communicate that. And then all of a sudden someone else kind of maybe scratches that itch and, mm-hmm. and there's an electricity or there's right. something there. And it's easy to confuse, to lose your brain and not think yeah. And not think rationally anymore and be sucked into something that because it's emotionally appealing or electric or intense or something like that when it's something that maybe
yeah, but
you weren't good at communicating to your spouse that
yeah, but if I get shocked by a 110 outlet cord, I don't think that's love. That's not love. That's something else.
You know, in the Super Bowl commercials, one of my favorite was
just say
the
Super Bowl.
She did say
Super
Bowl.
Super Bowl commercials.
My name's Misty. I'm from Greenbow, Alabama.
One of my favorites was the, I think it was an Uber commercial with Jennifer Aniston. And she
Uber Eats. It was forget.
Eats.
You got to
yeah,
forget
yeah.
something.
Uber
that,
Eats.
That was kind of gross.
And
the guy in his underwear is gross. I don't want to see any man in their underwear.
How did I miss that?
She said, you know, sometimes to remember something, you have to forget some things. You have to make room for things. If to remember something, that means you have to make room by forgetting something else.
And she forgot Ross.
And so that made me laugh, but it also made me think of kind of like what we're talking about today. You know, when we get in those situations where we feel like our spouses just aren't getting us or we're aggravated or they're not doing it for us or whatever, you know, it's at that time I think we have to remember why we're married, who we're married to, and forget about our own and not really just shove your feelings down and not think about, because I know we have to, you know, feel what we feel. But two, it brings me, you know, I think about Galatians and how we have to crucify those things in ourselves. To be in a marriage that's successful in God's eyes and for us too, there's a lot of fleshly things that we have to, and I'm speaking for myself, just crucify those things and not let those things surface up.
Mm, that's good stuff. I agree with you wholeheartedly. This is a good time maybe to transition to what does a good marriage look like? We've talked a lot about what it doesn't look like. What does it look like?
I know at camp they use the, they talk so much about not being unequally yoked, and which is different than yolks.
Isn't that when you have an egg, when you crack it open, there's two yolks inside of it, there's double yolked? It's two for one.
My chickens do that.
Your chickens do that? You got special chickens.
They are special.
But I think just
like
the
their owner.
going in the same direction is what that means. You know, you have to be going, be going in the same direction. You can't be going.
Do the students understand the metaphor?
Because they do I break it down for
it's
them.
It's a Bible verse,
a picture.
Right? It's a good Bible verse, but the idea of two oxen that one's tall, one's small, one's far away. They're not they're not even balanced with each other.
Right.
So it's the idea of being locked in together.
I think the problem with that. Is the way it's often presented.
No one's ever seen an oxen?
I'm going to bash the church again here. Is the,
oh,
the message, the message that so many guys like we heard at the retreat talking to teenagers kind of dumbs it down and basically makes it sound like if you're a Christian and he's a Christian and you've both true love waited and all of these things, that means you're equally yoked and your life is, you're going to get married and then it's going to be bliss.
Everything's going to be perfect.
Right.
That's right.
Which is the same way we sell Jesus.
Yes.
You give your heart to Jesus and he'll take care.
They actually said that there. If you knew what was waiting for you, no, you still might have a hard life.
An ox is still,
it's just,
a yoked ox is working. They're pulling in the same direction because they're plowing a field. They're doing something that is challenging and difficult, which is, in this case, surviving, living on planet Earth.
And that's better when you're married.
And planting seeds for the next generation.
Oh,
see
look
the
at
whole
you.
Metaphor?
Wow.
There it all
wow.
goes.
Yeah, the yoke thing, I agree with the Bible verse, what it's telling us. Mm-hmm. I think that our understanding of that is completely misgiven.
Well, I think it's just thrown out and saying, well, don't, you know, marry...
Well, we solved this problem by saying if you marry a Christian, you're good.
Right.
You could marry another Christ follower and still not really be in a good relationship.
I mean,
which then goes back to the whole idea of our idea of what it means to be a Christ follower is oftentimes diluted.
That's
I think that's true. That's a different topic, though.
And I think it doesn't give, I think students should have a choice. Singleness is also a gift. You know, it's not you're just in this relationship because you have to be. You don't have to be married. Singleness is a gift.
There you don't have to have kids.
That's true. Or grandkids. He's not buying singleness as a gift.
What other aspects indicate a successful marriage or a good, healthy marriage?
I think it's got to be safe. I think you have to be okay to go
are
back.
Are we talking violence? Or are we taking emotional safety?
All of the above. Mm-hmm. I think it has to be so safe that your wife was willing to let you see her feet. And
you're
and
just never going to let that go.
I'm not. I'm just because it's a great analogy. It's a great metaphor. Is that if we're going to intimately connect with another person, there has to be some risk on our part because we're going to put ourselves out there. But at the same time, there's this learned idea that when I do that, I'm safe to do it, which creates an atmosphere for healthy communication. Because I can bring to you my hard emotions. I can bring to you my bad moods. I can bring to you my toe jam. You know, whatever I can, and I'm not. And
I want. She does not.
I was just taking the metaphor.
There was no pathology about her feet at all that were negative. There's no disease. No disgust. They're beautiful.
No extra
they're
toes.
I would have loved an extra toe. I would have adored that. But yeah, no. There's
my point is you have to be safe. It has to be a safe place.
I think safe is good. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's always boring.
No, not at all.
Because I think that part of a healthy good marriage is there's always a level of excitement.
Mm-hmm. You get to just live every single day with your best friend. I mean, I love it. Greg and I, we laugh. Oh, my gosh, we laugh. And
well, you have to bandage him up because he needs you because he's always hurting himself.
Well, I'm not much better.
I was about to say, hey, man.
They're a pair.
What a combo.
But it's just growing old with your best friend. You know, I can't think of.
Adam Sandler had it right.
I know. It's just fine. You get a family discount on your insurance, right? I mean, there's benefits.
I guess there's truth in
there's benefits.
I think that the friendship is important. I'd rather be with Kim than anybody. But I also think that it's more than friendship. Mm-hmm. It's one level down with deep commitment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So a good marriage, a healthy marriage, is where both people are deeply committed mm-hmm. to the well-being of the other.
Well, there has to be communication, like Daryl said. You have to have an open line of honesty, communication, and transparency. I think there can't be secrets. There can't be hidden agendas. There can't be hidden motives. I think you both have to live your life as an open book to each other, and I think that's a top priority.
Mm. The no secrets to me goes financial mm-hmm. as well as it does relationship. We mentioned earlier about extras and other people. If I ever get a sense that there's a woman who is unhealthily thinking or my way, the first person I talk to is my wife.
Right.
Hey, this woman. Yeah, and almost always comes like, yeah, I got my eye on her. she's already picked up those vibes.
Because we do, don't we, Joni?
Yeah,
we pick up the vibes.
And it's I'm just amazed anyone would ever be interested in that. I'm kind of blind to it usually. Just having a good time. But that's a part of it. I also think there's a sense of laughter and of joy, of revelry. If that's a word we could use.
And don't
use.
You think God wants to see, I mean, we want to see our children happy and healthy and thriving, and I think God wants to see the same for his children, too.
Right, that's
he
why.
He wants to see the same thing.
Earlier talking about marriage, I think that if we're not enjoying our marriage and we're not happy in it, you're not doing
something's
it right.
Yeah,
right.
And when I say that, doesn't mean you're married to the wrong person. don't hear me say, well, I'm not happy in my marriage. I'm going to leave him or leave her and go find someone who does make me happy. No, it's possible.
But you work towards that.
The two of you are
work
just
towards that.
Not, you're not yeah. jiving because you both have the wrong ideas about mm-hmm. what this marriage thing is all about.
Mm-hmm. And I think a good marriage, you can sense that and you can figure out this is what I need to do. Like for Robert and I know it's a good long drive. Like, If we're not connecting, then I'll be like, do you want to go to Brady and get something to eat? That's 2 hours away. Yes. But I don't know.
There's nowhere to eat in Brady. Like
Boondocks. It's delicious.
It is delicious. It's
where?
Really good.
Boondocks.
No, I just drive to as fast as I can with my eyes closed.
Well,
Brady.
That
Brady,
also works.
Brady's
but,
terrifying.
But I think you have to know in your relationship, okay, something it feels off. What do we do?
You have to react.
You can't just let it fester.
And one of the things that helps with that is spending time together intentionally.
Yes.
Right.
I think a lot of husbands and wives don't ever like talk. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They watch a movie together or they do something, but they don't talk. Mm-hmm. When the weather's good, Kim and I try and walk at least two or three times a week together. It's about an hour where you're just with one person and you talk. And it's so good for our communication and our marriage.
Yeah.
Not just our health, but that way.
It'd probably be better for us if we walked some. We just take a 2-hour drive to eat.
Whatever works for
whatever
you.
Whatever works for you. So. The problem we would have in a car for the two of us is we mess with the radio.
Yeah.
The conversation might not be as natural because you're actually having to work to drive. When you're walking, your mind's completely disengaged.
It takes me a little more effort to walk, I think.
Okay.
Well, and dependable, too. I think you want to be dependable and you want your spouse to be dependable as well. I think that's huge.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, dependable. That's a good one. I had made a list of all the bad marriages in the Bible.
Ooh.
Oh.
And I came to a shocking conclusion or two. I can't find many good ones. Yeah. They're like all bad. They're like all bad. And that's why those of you who are listening may be thinking this idea, well, my marriage isn't perfect. What am I? Does that mean God doesn't love me or there's no hope for me or I came from a bad marriage? I think a lot of folks have divorced parents. It colors our ideas. Just relax, take a deep breath, and realize that there is no perfect family in the Bible. Mm-hmm. They're all messed up. It's out. We want you to have a good marriage. We want you to experience the blessings of the Lord. But His love of you and His using of you and His kingdom is not always predicated upon having the perfect marriage, the perfect family. Just Abraham's was married to his half-sister, which is gross. Don't go looking at the family tree for good marriage stock. That's a bad idea. And it's all downhill from there. One of the great miracles of faith is that God took such a messed up family. I mean, from the beginning, the most messed up family, and brought us Jesus.
If there's not a greater theme of the Bible, it's God doing some really beautiful, and Ash Wednesday is tomorrow, doing some really beautiful thing with not a lot of resources.
Yeah. Well, the Bible, I love it that the Bible gives us great examples of things to do, but then He also gives us examples of things not to do.
Yeah, don't have 800 wives.
Don't.
This is a bad
just
idea.
Just don't marry your cousin, even though she's cute.
No. And on that note, guys, you're amazing. We'll be back later with more podcasting. We are recording this one on Fat Tuesday 2024. I think it's probably not going to be released until March, but keep that in mind. That's why I mentioned the Super Bowl ads, because the Super Bowl just happened a couple of days ago for us.
You can still watch
Super Bowl.
The
Super
bow. The bow.
Bye, guys. Love you.
Neighbor. See ya.
Thanks so much for listening to Under the Water Tower, a podcast dedicated to honest discussion of the Bible. To donate to this ministry, just go to fmf.life/give. That's fmf.life/give. Just a reminder to subscribe to Under the Water Tower on Apple Podcast and Spotify. That way you'll never miss an episode. Help us to spread the word about our podcast by talking about it and sharing it on your social media. Thanks again for joining us. On behalf of Under the Water Tower, I'm Kelly Trepain.